Been a very trying month for those who are retired or those who are in a critical industry. For others, because of the financial constraints, this is turning into a very, very difficult situation. Some people are losing or could lose their homes. They could lose their retirement. The country could go into a depression. We really don't know which way this is going to go yet, but there's a lot of emotions, a lot of stresses and strains and difficulties that people are struggling with. And I was talking to one individual this week, and they asked me if I would dust up one of the old sermons and talk a little bit about stress and peace and how to cope with some of these trials and troubles that we don't have any solutions for. We don't have any answers for. We're not in control right now. And although science is telling us we've got this covered, we really don't know what's going to happen. They're about to open things back up. It may backfire. It may not. We just don't know. And so there's a lot of stresses. And so, and this isn't the only time, as I point out in this first paragraph, and for those of you who have already read my bulletin on the article that I has the same title, this is a completely different lesson. I don't like to do something and then do something else that's the same. So I took some time this morning. I think I pulled maybe two or three paragraphs out of that. So if you've read it or if you haven't read it, you want to read it, it has the same title, but it flows in a little different direction. But as I note in the first paragraph, there's times in people's lives where the bottom just drops out. You get a phone call, been a terrible accident. You go to the doctor and you get bad news. You make some financial investments and they don't work out. We buy a car and the car breaks down. There's just lots of little things that come and go in our lives, and they can make a complete upheaval. And when they do, the lives of some people can just come crashing down. And for people in the world, the only way it's going to be restored is if things get pulled back up again. Otherwise, they may live the rest of their lives very unhappy. As the writer of Ecclesiastes puts it, that they will die in bitterness and darkness and despair. The second paragraph, the death of a loved one. Major health setbacks, war, depression, pestilence. They bring two different outcomes. Let's read the book of Job, chapter 1, verses 20 and 22. Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, fell to the ground, and worshipped. And he said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." You can just see the peace in Job's heart. He has resigned himself to submitting to God's will, just like Jesus did when he stood before the cross. You know, sometimes in God's overall plan, we are going to be forced to suffer. I think about people like Habakkuk and Jeremiah, who are right on the verge of the destruction of the Jewish nation. They didn't deserve to be destroyed. They didn't deserve the punishment. Just like Jesus said, when the destruction of Jerusalem comes, pray that it doesn't come in the winter or doesn't come on the Sabbath day so you can get out, because tremendous tribulation is going to come. Sometimes we get out, sometimes we can't. So Job has the right attitude. And even though he has just lost his children, 8 children I think it was, he lost all of his possessions, he's got nothing, this is his response. Now, with this still fresh in his mind, Satan comes back with boils. Now we have a health problem, and a very excruciating, I don't know if you've ever had one boil before. There are certain kinds of boils that you just can't hardly touch. It's just excruciating, and you can't wait for it to heal up. But this was from the bottom of his feet to the top of his head, boil upon boil upon boil. And he talks later in the book about how they were breaking open and the pus was coming out, and it was a smell, and he was scraping it off. He was out in the dust. And his wife hit her breaking point. Now, whether she did before, we don't know. But at this point, God decides to tell us that she said, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? You going to take this from God? Curse God and die." And Job says, "You speak as one of the foolish women speaks. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. He didn't sin with his lips because he didn't sin with his heart. His heart didn't go there. He didn't go on the line of reasoning that the wife went through, whatever her processes were. And you know something, brethren? We get under the influence of powerful emotions like despair and grief and bitterness and anguish and remorse and what might have been. When those emotions get strong enough, we don't think clearly anymore. We're not thinking properly. And most of us have been in a situation like that before, where we could have been overwhelmed. For some reason, Job was not overwhelmed. And that reason is very important for those of us who are trying to come up with a plan to deal with the ramifications that could occur as a result of this. And so, can we empathize with Job? Can we understand Job? Have we made the same decisions that Job has made? Whenever life takes a turn we weren't expecting, like the loss of a wife or the loss of a child. I mean, those are things you don't get over. Those are things that you can't fix, and that no amount of time is going to resolve. Sometimes, like I say, financial, losing a job, financial problems, or this terrible virus, which could change the course of the nature of our country. We've had how many years of prosperity now since the 50s? Probably 70 years of unbroken prosperity. And we hear the word depression thrown out. We don't believe it yet. We don't believe it. Now, in other countries, I'm talking to people in Malawi and India, and they work for their daily bread, and there's no one in the government sending them anything. And when this is over, there's not going to be any jobs for a long time. And so these people are looking at ultimately starving. I don't know if you heard the report, but they think there's like 20 nations or 30 nations that will have famines of biblical proportions, is the way they're putting it, if this continues. And it's going to continue. You know, we hear rumors that maybe the heat's going to change things. Well, it's not changing things in India. Prince told me the other day it's 120 degrees and humid. And they're growing and growing. And they're locking them down. And they can't work. Some of them are going hungry. So, Job is a critical thing for us to be thinking about. I know most of us, I'm the same way. Most of us, most of the time, are just thinking, well, this is not going to be a big deal. We're going to get through this. But for some people, it's already a big deal. Jack or Darlene told Jeannie yesterday that his aunt died of the COVID virus. That's what killed her. And so that's got to be an even more grievous thing. And a lot of people are going through that. And maybe we will. We just don't know yet. We don't know what's going to happen. I know one thing. If one of you dies or I die, we're going to have a totally different view of this virus than we do right now. Because we've been sheltered for the most part. James encourages us in chapter 5, right in the middle of the first page. "My brethren, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord as an example of suffering and patience. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You have heard the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful." Now that's the point. What is the end of the Lord here? Well, in Romans chapter 8, Paul says, "All things work together for good to those who love God." And there are times in the history of the world where God has to shake it, like he did in the days of Noah, like he did in the days of Lot, like he did with the seven nations of Canaan, and with Israel, and with Rome, and with Jerusalem, and on it goes. And someday, some Christians are going to be here when that does happen. Now, I'm not trying to be pessimistic here. I'm just trying to be realistic. We really don't know where this is going to go yet. We think we do. Because we've been so confident in the past, we've always been able to pick ourselves up. And it looks like that's the case, and if it is, then we won't have to worry about this. But if it doesn't go in that direction, if it goes in a different direction, and we find ourselves in a very different world, are we ready for that? Are we like these prophets? You know, I talk later on in the lesson about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego standing before the fiery furnace, or Daniel before the lion's den, or David saying, and he might have been talking about Goliath when he said, "Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I won't be afraid because you're with me and your rod and your staff comfort me." Now, that's exactly how he stood before Goliath. And I've thought about that for many years. Could I do that? Could you do that? Could you be the guy? The rest of the nation couldn't do it. But David had the confidence to be able to do this. And so, as James puts it, we see over and over the end intended by the Lord, who is merciful and compassionate. And so that's the difference. The difference between how we look at this is based on our faith. Now, the verse right in the middle of the page is where the title comes from. And that's where it says, "Let the peace of God rule in your hearts." Now, I bolded the word rule because I want to talk about that a little bit in the next page or in the next paragraph. The term rule has many, many different meanings in English. A father rules in his home. A president rules over his nation. But this is a specific term. The Greeks use the word brabuo the way we use the word umpire. And when you talked about the brabuo, they would think of the Olympic Games. They would think of professional sports. They would think of the arbitrator or the referee or the umpire who's there to intervene. And you think to yourself, well, what does that have to do with peace? Well, in an athletic contest, when two people are going for the ball and one thinks that the other didn't treat them fairly, they're liable to come down and get very angry, and that referee will jump right in and stop it. Well, that's what we need in our hearts. When these emotions that overtook Job's wife, when these emotions that sometimes hit us and we start thinking maybe I'll curse God, and maybe we actually do curse God and then think better of it later. But the term rule has to do with what happens on the athletic field when emotions are so powerful or rules are being questioned and they're there to get things back in order. So here comes my depression, and the peace of God will talk it down and remove it. Here comes that anger. Here comes that despondency. Here comes that anguish. And then I break it down and I move it away with the peace of God. So the peace of God becomes an umpire in my heart. Now the question we all have to ask ourselves is whether it's working right now. We have this umpire. It's available to us. But we have to let it. You see, this is a command, but it's a passive command. This is something God wants to do, but we have to help him. We have to let it happen. We can close our minds. When you get into an emotional situation, you can just be focused inward, or you can continue to let God control things. So the difference between those who have learned to make God's peace the umpire that arbitrates, talks down, and removes these powerful fleshly emotions that we shouldn't have, but we do have. You remember, the fruits of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, kindness, goodness, self-control. The very things that we can lose in a moment of extreme duress. But not Job, and not David, and not the prophets, and not Jesus, and not Paul. Now, I believe that God's peace, this peace of God that he describes here, is a very large component to the secret. Paul talks about a secret. The word secret, it was used by the Greek philosophers to describe something that was part of a very complicated process that you have to be initiated into to understand. So right now, we have the secret of the COVID virus. It's a secret. And people are working it out to figure it out, and they will eventually. And pretty soon it'll be very simple, and anybody will be able to understand it. Well, Paul calls it a secret like that. So he says in verse 11, toward the bottom of the page, I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low. Man, if you read 1 Corinthians chapter 4, we see how low he was brought. Or if we read 2 Corinthians chapter 12, we see how low he was brought in fastings and beatings and stonings and in mistreatment, in cold and thirst and hunger. He runs the gamut. There isn't anything that Paul didn't have to endure. Betrayal, in peril among false brethren, in peril among my countrymen, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils in the city. I know how to be brought low. So when Paul's in all of those things, he knows the secret for that not to bother him. He has the umpire. And the umpire is there anytime. God will get me through this. God isn't tempting me above what I'm able. God, all things work together for good to those that love God. Count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials. This is the peace of God that's arbitrating in our minds and channeling. Actually, what it does is it takes those powerful emotions and puts them on the off-ramp and gets them out of our heart. So I've learned how to be brought low. I know how to abound. In any and every circumstance. I believe that if Paul had been in Job's situation, this would have helped him, and I think that's probably what helped Job. I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, of abundance and need. So with this umpire, Paul can go through every experience that he's experienced without anxiety. We're going to see toward the end of the lesson, we're going to talk about don't be anxious. I think Paul knew how not to be anxious. Matter of fact, he puts don't be anxious about three verses or four, actually about eight verses before this verse. In chapter 4, verses 5 and 6, in nothing be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, exactly the same term that was used in Colossians to talk about being an umpire, the peace of God will guard your thoughts and your hearts. Well, that's what an umpire does. And it's going to protect us. Well, that's part of the secret. So, can we do this? Do we know the secret that when some terrible thing comes into our lives, I'm not saying we won't cry, I'm not saying we won't agonize, but it's not going to affect our relationship with God. We are human. And when we lose someone we love, we're going to face that grief and sorrow and maybe even despair as we look at the rest of our lives. I remember my father was sitting on the bed when my mother died. We were all sitting there talking. She said, here it comes again. And the next thing I knew, she slumped over. She was in our bedroom at the time. And my dad had to watch as the paramedics came and did the CPR and did all the things that they did, only to let us know we couldn't get her back. The pacemaker was working, but the heart would not beat. And we worked and worked and worked. And my dad had to deal with that. But even though there's agony and anguish involved, and some of us may go through that same thing, and that may be burned into our minds for the rest of our lives, thinking about how they tried to save the person I've been living with for over 50 years, and they couldn't get her. The other night, I was thinking about it, and I started crying again. I mean, it's just the kind of thing you don't get out of your mind. Wishing something else could have been done. But in the midst of that agony, there has to be a sunlight, a sunshine of God, and our faith in God, and our commitment to God, and our trust in God that doesn't lead any further than the grief. I don't think when Job shaved his head and rent his robe that he wasn't grieving. He was agonizing over his losses. but it didn't transfer. The peace of God was still controlling and guiding him. So we begin by looking at that verse at the very bottom of the page. You will keep him in perfect peace. Now, notice again, this is passive. This isn't something I have to do. This is something God will do. You will keep him in perfect peace, whose mind is stayed on you. Now, there's the condition. The promise, you will keep him in perfect peace. The condition, put your mind on God because you trust God. Well, once again, let's go ahead and turn the page over. Once again, we have a Hebrew word that needs to be looked at a little bit. Stayed. What does that mean? Your heart is stayed. Well, the word stayed, very first paragraph, top of the page, the word stayed is a Hebrew verb that means to lean upon, to take hold of, to hold, uphold, to rest, or support. So my trust in God is going to take hold of, uphold, and support. That's what happened to Job. That's what happened to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. That's what happened to Daniel. They were not overwhelmed with the circumstance they were in because their heart was stayed. They knew. How's it put in the New Testament? I know whom I believed, and I am persuaded that he is able to keep that which I've committed against that day. That's staying your heart on the Lord. Or like Job said, the Lord gave, the Lord took away, blessed be the name of the Lord. His heart is stayed, leaning upon because he trusts God, that even though we may never find the reason, and there may not be a reason we can comprehend, but God had a reason. And we have to trust God. I'll never let you be tempted. And everything can work together for good. So put another way, trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. Don't try to figure out, why did God do this to me? That's not a good direction for your mind to go in. We have to trust him with all our hearts. When Daniel stood before the lion's den, and the king tried to save him, Daniel wasn't afraid. Because of that promise in Hebrews 10:28, which he already knew. He was already convinced. All things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. And right after that, he talks about tribulation and persecutions. The context is pretty clear. It's talking about our God knows every tribulation and trial and suffering and agony and anguish that the human race can go through. And he has so devised the gospel and so devised the curse so that none of these things, as Paul says, we are more than conquerors, because I'm persuaded that death nor life, and then he lists some other things, nor any other created thing, like a pestilence, like a famine, like a drought, can separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus. I guess one of the things that we really need to think about is this will winnow out. This will help us. You know, when you get the grain and the chaff and you throw them up in the air and you wait for the wind to blow it away, a situation like this will really help us to see. If our service to God is based on the spiritual blessings that can never be removed, and none of these other things even matter because we trust God, that all of our eggs are in one basket, a basket that God is keeping, and we don't have to worry about them being broken. If we put them anywhere else, they could be broken. But in God's basket, no one can snatch them out of my hand. My Father is greater than all. And no one can snatch us out of his hand. Or as the Hebrew writer put it, what can man do to me? The Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. As I mentioned earlier, just before Paul spoke of his secret, which I hope we now understand, the secret is you trust in God with all of your heart. You lean on God and you recognize that God is working good even through this. And that, like Jesus found in the Garden of Gethsemane, sometimes thy will be done which ultimately led to some wonderful things. And now Jesus is enthroned in heaven as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. So you see the end of the Lord, that he was compassionate and merciful. So these things we're going through, they will help us get to heaven if we keep them in the right perspective. But if we can't do that, if all we can see is I need my physical possessions, I need my health, I need my long life, I need physical things. We're like the people Jesus fed, and all they could think of was the food. Jesus said, you seek for the bread which perishes. But what I just did for you proves that I'm the bread that comes down from heaven and you'll never perish. Now, the last verse I want to touch on is right in the middle of the last page. In nothing be anxious, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and your thoughts in Christ Jesus. Now, this is the same thing as the umpire, the arbitrator, the person who holds somebody back when they're so angry, and the thing that holds back the emotions when they threaten to overwhelm us. And here we're told that that same peace of God surpasses all understanding. It doesn't make sense. You can't logically explain why this happens. Because it's beyond our comprehension. In other words, there's something more here. Something more. Like I said, in Isaiah it said, you will keep him in perfect peace. See, God is keeping in perfect peace. So there's a power that God has that surpasses my trust and my belief that he will uphold me. And it's spoken of here. When you, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your request made known to God, it's somewhat like when you turn on the stove. You turn on the stove, but you don't heat the water. There's an energy and a power. Just like the scriptures are said, the word of God energizes those of you who believe. And the power of prayer to give a safe journey, to give a safe operation, is not in the prayer. It's in the God who can circumvent human events and bring about his purpose. And so I'm convinced that this is a conditional promise that will unlock something. Just like when you're baptized and the remission of sins comes, that doesn't come in the water. That comes from God doing something in heaven. That comes from me dying with him and being buried with him and being raised with him. There's a spiritual component here, a powerful component. Prince puts it like this. He comes from a charismatic background. And he says, why do you want these physical miracles that are only going to perish with your body when you could have the spiritual miracles, the power in the scriptures, the power of baptism, the power of prayer? Why would you want to talk about these physical things and overlook the spiritual things? And he's got a good point there, and they can't answer him. So God says, and again, this is a conditional promise, the peace of God cannot guard my heart unless, in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, I bring my request to God. You see, behind every need, there's a request. I need to figure out what the request is and ask him for it. But Paul says, sometimes the Spirit intercedes with groaning that can't be uttered because we don't know how to pray as we ought. I don't know what to ask for in this situation. Kind of where I am right now. I'm praying to God. I was out this morning praying. I said, Lord, if this is not a punishment that you have your plans, please spare the nation and spare the world. But I don't know what God's doing right now. I don't know what to pray for. It's like when I pray for Jeannie's mom and dad. Her dad is 89, her mother is 84 or 80. Let's see, I'm 66, so she's 66, or 86. And we don't know what to pray. Father, give them a long life. Well, they have a long life. Father, spare their lives. Well, is that really? I don't know. I often pray, Lord, you know what they need, and you give them what they need. I don't know what to pray. Sometimes we don't know what to pray. I don't know what to pray about this virus right now. If God's going to use this to decimate the world and bring us to our knees and bring us back into a closer spiritual relationship with Him, I'm ready for that, even if it means I have to die, even if it means people I love have to die, even if it means, and I've prayed this for years, Father, I would be willing to lose all of the creature comforts we have right now if something could bring the American people back to their knees so that we could have the kind of growth we had in the 50s. And now we're in the middle of something that could bring that, and I don't know what to pray. But I'm praying. And the peace of God is guarding my heart. I'm ready, come what will. I'm ready. If I have to die, I'm at peace. I'm ready to die. If my wife has to die, that's a tougher one. I don't want that to happen. But, and I know the grief and the anguish that'll come. But if that's what occurs, the peace of God will guard my heart, and I will pray, and I will know that she's waiting in heaven, and that someday we'll meet again. So God promises this peace. Now, let's just read a little bit of this third paragraph from the bottom. During this time when the pestilence that has turned the world upside down, is the peace of God umpiring in your heart? Sometimes I watch the news and I just turn it off. I can't take this anymore. It's just an overwhelming, the things that are going on. And I'm not just talking about what's going on in America. I got some news from Malawi, and they're rioting over there because they can see that if you stop our livelihoods, we're going to die. More people are going to die from starvation than from the virus. And you're looking at that and you're going, I don't know what I would do as a leader, but I don't think they're making the right decisions right now. But I know one thing. This world's going to be upside down come September, October, November, when a lot of these places don't have any food because they didn't let the farmers plant. And you're thinking, how could they not know that? But anyway, as I'm saying, I trust God. God's going to make this work out to His will, just like Noah had to trust in God. You know what? Can you imagine what he was thinking when that rain started? When God closed the door and it started to rain? I don't know if it thundered or not, or lightning, it might have. But soon the ark was off the ground, and he knew what that meant when he was starting to float in the water. Are we casting our anxiety on him? Do we need a good outcome before peace returns? Is that what it's going to take? I'm not going to feel good about anything until I've got everything back again. Country's back where it needs to be. We don't need that. We don't need that crutch. It'd be nice. But Jesus didn't get that. Paul didn't get that. The apostles didn't get it. The prophets didn't get it. They had to learn the secret of how to be content, the peace that works in our lives. So through God's promises, it's left to us to get the umpire. He's not going to give it to us. Let the peace of God umpire in your heart. You have to let that happen. You will keep him in perfect peace whose mind is stayed. In other words, you are upholding him. He is trusting you completely because he trusts you. And then, count it all joy when you fall into manifold trials. And then, the peace of God which passes all understanding will guard your heart. So when we're being persecuted, we're under heavy trials and sorrows, and maybe we're going through the valley of the valley of the shadow of death. Most of us haven't been there. Some of us have. But when we pass through that, now David wrote this after, so that it doesn't mean just before he died. He was in a situation many times with Saul where he despaired of his life. If I have to walk through that, his rod, his staff, they comfort me. That's the umpire. That's the peace that passes understanding. That is the casting your anxieties on him because he cares for you. He will never leave us. He will never forsake us. And all things do work together for good to those that love God. Now, if we can put all this together, and again, this is a wonderful exercise. I make a point in there about learning how to type or learning how to drive. You know, when you first start, it's very uncomfortable and very cumbersome. But after a while, you don't even think about it anymore. Well, that's what this is like. Right now we're going through this and maybe we're having some upheavals. Maybe we're having some difficulties. Maybe we haven't yet because nothing's happened to us yet. But when those things come, we have an opportunity to exercise. We have an opportunity to learn how to do this. So keep this lesson and think about it. And when it comes up, start looking at, here's the tools. These are the tools that we can use to put together a buffer, an umpire, a comfort, a perfect peace. But like I said, they're all conditional. God can do it, but only if we let him. So as we now pick up our songbooks, and we need to think a little bit. We're going to be singing Why Do You Wait here in just a moment. We need to think about, is there anything we need to do right now? Is there anything we need to pray about? Anything we need to change? Of course, if we're a sinner and haven't repented, then none of these things are going to apply to us. So we have to obey the gospel, and we have to be right with God. And then we can start working out our own salvation with fear and trembling. So if there's anyone in the audience today that would like to make their life right with God, either by being washed in the blood of the Son of God, by being baptized into Christ and putting on Christ, or by coming forward and confessing your sins one to another, we would now invite you to come while we together stand and sing.